We just want to thank all of our monthly supporters on the podcast. We also welcome you to head on over to thrivinginthetrenches.com, where you can find our support page. You can also find the links to Gina Finster of Someday Saint. She is supporting this episode, and you can check out her blog on Facebook, Instagram, and Etsy. You can find her fun clothing and special designs and her very special Family Litany of Saints, where she will custom make a print for your family. Again, you can find her at somedaysaints.com.
This is not just me, and that we actually are doing ourselves a huge disservice by not talking about these issues that Catholic families face. The result is that we feel like we have to go it alone.
We are women encouraging and equipping women to universally and uniquely serve Christ in their feminine vocation.
By embracing joy, laughter, freedom, and friendship, we are seeking to thrive in the trenches of our domestic churches.
Welcome to Thriving in the Trenches podcast. This is Becky Carter.
And this is Megan Schreiber. You are listening to episode number 53. Our topic today is Good Enough is Good Enough. And that is the title of the book and the author that we have appearing today, Colleen Duggan. Colleen is a Catholic writer whose work has appeared in Catholic Digest, Creative Catechist, CatholicMom.com, Alatea, and Integrated Catholic Life. She is a catechist, leads Bible studies, and speaks on Catholicism and Catholic parenting. She founded the women's ministry at her parish. Duggan earned a bachelor's degree in religious studies and psychology from St. Mary's College and a master's degree in education from the University of Notre Dame. Go Irish! She is a contributor to the Catholic Moms Prayer Companion. Colleen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, welcome, Colleen. It's so good to have you. And I would like for you to just kind of open up sharing with our listeners a little bit about you, Colleen, and a little bit about your journey. What got you to where you are now?
Well, I am Colleen, and I am a wife and mom of six kids. And I, about 10 years ago, decided it was right when blogging started taking off, and everyone, I was at home with a bunch of small kids. I'd quit working and everyone had started blogging. And there were a few blogs that I liked reading, and I thought to myself, well, I can do that. So without much prayer or any really knowledge about how to start a website whatsoever, I just started one. I went on Blogger, and it was easy then to do it. And I just started writing and writing and writing and writing. And I wrote for many, many, many years. And eventually I got enough courage to submit articles to different places, and those articles would get accepted. And so I just kept writing, and eventually that writing turned into a book.
Now, were you raised in a Catholic home? Can you tell us a little bit about that upbringing?
I was raised in a Catholic home, but it wasn't a super Orthodox home, I should say. My mom was a baptized Catholic and really didn't know her faith at all. She was not catechized. She grew up in California in the 60s, and she was not catechized in her faith at all. And my dad's parents were very Orthodox Catholics, but they really, I think, started faithfully practicing after he was probably, you know, a grown kid. Although he was a faithful altar server for his childhood. And I know when my grandparent, I remember as a kid, they were daily communicants and regular rosary prayers and things like that. So my dad was definitely a Catholic, but my mom, because she didn't really know the faith very well, we weren't raised in an uber Catholic environment. They both thought Catholic education was important. So we moved a lot because my dad was in the service. But when we came back from being overseas on one particular stint, they had made the decision through some financial help of my grandparents to put us in Catholic school. And I think that's really where my mom's conversion happened, because she was preparing my younger sister for her first communion when she read about transubstantiation and what happens on the altar during the consecration. And she started weeping right there on the couch because she never was familiar with the church's teachings on the Eucharist becoming the body and blood of Christ, you know, during the Mass. And so from that moment on, once she knew, and she befriended the sisters who ran the school, the Nashville Dominicans who ran the school where we were attending, she started going, learning more about her faith, and our family started going to Mass regularly after that.
That's amazing. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't you have a sister who's a sister of that same order?
Yes. And because of those sisters, my sister found her vocation. And so this is anecdotal, but, you know, everyone is always bemoaning the state of Catholic education today. But I am so grateful for our Catholic education in my own growing up, because it was how really my parents came back to the faith. And without, you know, the textbooks that they read, you know, and the encounters they had with the sisters, I'm not so sure that that would have happened.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that there was a point in your own journey where your faith really became your own?
Well, yes, I would say probably when I was in college, but I would say that my Catholic education definitely greased the wheel. I started going to Catholic school when I was in fourth grade. And I think my mom's conversion to the faith, even though she had been a baptized Catholic, she'd never really practiced. I mean, she was married in the church. And at some point I received my first communion and my brother did too, but I don't really know how that, we were overseas when that happened. So I don't know how all the, I don't remember going to any official religious education training is what I'm saying. But you know, over time and through the gift of my Catholic education, I decided to go my last year in high school to a Catholic women's college. And it was there when I was away from my parents and kind of doing my own thing that I started reading the church's teachings, especially the encyclicals, papal encyclicals. I had to take intro to religious education classes as prereqs. And I remember being a young college student reading Humanae Vitae, and my mind was blown. I mean, I was 18 years old in the basement of my college dorm reading Humanae Vitae and the church's teachings on sex and marriage. And I remember that night as I put my pen down and my highlighter down on the table next to my coffee, I remember thinking, I will always embrace what the church teaches. Hmm. And that was such a grace. I mean, that wasn't anything that came from me. It was just once I knew what the church taught, it was hard for me intellectually to deny the truth of it. And so because of that religious education at the college level, I really became open to learning more and was very much hungry for what the church offered in terms of guidance to the people.
I love that. Boy, you're definitely an outlier. I mean, most people aren't doing that in college, which makes me think that, you know, we're gonna really dive in and talk about your book, which I've read and I love. Basically, the subtitle of this, Good Enough is Good Enough, again, by Colleen Duggan, Confessions of an Imperfect Catholic Mom. And one of your titles, one of the chapters in here is, I Don't Know How to Keep My Kids Catholic. And I can't imagine that there's not a mom out there that doesn't wrestle with that same thing, especially when we've had an experience like you have, that moment of grace, that moment of truth where you know, oh, gosh, this is the fullness, this is the truth, and I'm going to walk in it, right? And then now all of a sudden we've got these little souls and we think, oh, we got to keep them here. We've got, you know, we don't want them to fall off the path. And so, you know, I wonder if your past and your story in a good way is also what contributed to a lot of kind of what this book is about, of, you know, having that fear in a sense that our kids could possibly fall away.
Definitely. I mean, especially when you look around and, you know, I know for myself, when I really came into a love for my faith as a young adult, and especially in my early 20s, I'm thinking, so now I'm out of college, I'm in graduate school, I'm teaching full time as a religion teacher in a Catholic school, and I'm taking notes about the kinds of Catholics I see around me, and there were a lot of different kinds, and I was attracted to the people who really seemed to love their faith and love the church, and they weren't they didn't feel that the church's teachings were a burden. And so in a lot of ways, I felt like they had figured out some kind of secret sauce that I had missed growing up. And honestly, I have to say, I've said this to my parents directly. The greatest thing my parents did, I think, was they did offer us that beautiful Catholic education, and they never spoke poorly of the church, and they did try to feed us in the best way they knew how and they could, given. And I think God filled in the gaps with the rest of it. And it was because of their humility, really, in what they didn't know, and they never proclaimed to be something other than what they really were, that I think it left me, at least, open to really searching on my own. Okay, what is the church teaching here? Do I agree with this? Do I want to get on board? And when I was newly married and young, I looked around, and there seemed to be these families who just never really had to wrestle with any of that. They just, maybe it was because they were baptized Catholics, cradle Catholics, raised cradle Catholics. They just seemed to know and live their faith and not have any quandaries about it. And they certainly didn't seem to wrestle with any kind of human dysfunction, which I could not say was the case. And so I was just perplexed. And I was like, well, I know how hard it is right now to live my faith. And I'm going to the Eucharist regularly. And I'm dragging myself to confession. And yet I still acted like a jerk around my husband. And I still yell at the toddler sometimes. And I would look at these other families, and maybe the same things were happening at their house. I don't know, but I just assumed they weren't because they were better Catholics than I was. I don't know if that's sound logic, but that is certainly what was going on in my head.
Well, it's also the voice of the evil one saying, you're the only one that's failing. You're the only one, you know.
Yeah. And I think it's hard, when you know. The ideal is, we all want to get to heaven. The ideal is sanctity, holiness. And we all good Catholics have that. And even the not so good Catholics, I think they want that. We all want heaven. And so if we know that that's where we want to be at the end game is heaven. And yet we look at our daily lives and we see how our own behavior limits choosing that final end game, it can be disheartening, I think. And anyone who's honest will look and see that they're where they lack, where their gaps are. And I saw that in my own life, and I just assumed that other people must not be struggling in the same way. Now, after many years of parenting and marriage and counseling and spiritual direction, I can say that actually isn't probably the truth. But it seemed to me at the time that these other families had some kind of rubric. And if I could just crack this Catholic rubric, then we would fix the generational sin of my past, and we would fix the dysfunction that I struggled with, and everything would be golden, and my kids would be saints, and we'd all get to heaven. And hopefully that will happen. But it's not probably because of anything spectacular I do. It's because I drag myself to Jesus and beg for his help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's such an important distinction. You know, Catholics get accused of being more worried about our works than our faith. And that's exactly what you just explained, you described is, okay, if I would just find the right rubric, then we'll all get to heaven. But the rubrics don't make us holy. They are a tool, but it's that faith and that going back to the source. The source is who heals our sin. The source is who heals the wounds, and Christ. And as you said, you are always going back to the Eucharist.
Most of us are all wrestling with that, probably on a daily basis to some degree. I love the title, Good Enough is Good Enough. I'm hoping you can talk a little bit more about that title, because I think maybe some people could kind of hear that initially and think, is that lowering the bar? And it's like, no.
Yes, I would love to, because several people have commented that to me. And, what is that line? There's a line from St. Paul about be perfect. No, who says that? Be perfect. Jesus says that. Be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect.
And yes.
not St. Paul. But we're called to perfection. I think for someone like me who tends to be kind of hard, I'm hard on myself. I'm super type A. There's like a right way of doing things and a wrong way of doing things in my brain. And that also translates into the right and wrong way to do things in the spiritual life. And unfortunately, I think there's a lot of grace and mercy there in our spiritual life. And that, and what I've had to learn is that my standards aren't actually necessarily Jesus's standards. You know, if I'm so stressed out about really superfluous details that in the grand scheme of things don't really make that big of a difference. I'm thinking of like certain kinds of liturgical celebrations that I could wrap myself around the pole about, that in the long run, yeah, okay, it's nice to have a cupcake for Mary's birthday. But if I'm, you know, screaming or I've lost the point of why we're doing it and I'm yelling at the 8-year-old for ruining the batter, like, is that really God's will that his mother have a cake for her birthday? I don't know. And maybe other people don't struggle like this. I don't know.
Clearly, we're laughing because we've been there. I'm just thinking of like past Christmas pictures, you know.
Yeah. Demons come out during the Christmas pictures.
Yes, I totally do. You know, and by the end, I'm like sweating. I mean, it's all 2 minutes and I've broken a sweat.
Yeah. And it's like I miss the forest through the trees because I'm so hellbent on doing it a certain way. And the spirit and the love and the mercy with which I'm called to undertake the task, I've completely lost. And so the title of the book, Good Enough is Good Enough, is really kind of how I had to get to a place where I realized my standards were really actually prohibitive in my journey to holiness because they weren't God's standards. They were these ridiculous, type A, perfectionistic, modus operandi rules that I had invented in my brain and that I had looked at on Pinterest and in Good Housekeeping magazine that were going to make me a good wife and mother and therefore a good Catholic and help me get my kids into heaven. And they were actually the thing that made me crazy. Mm-hmm. And so I had to really let go of some of those things and not make the presentation of the faith about the rules and the rubric, but really about God's love and mercy and developing a relationship with him and using my relationship as the springboard for bringing my kids along in the faith, not these other things that I had determined to be so important. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
It makes total sense. But, you know, it's prompting me to think about it in a way, you know, obviously we're talking about it as the role of being a mom. And we can, all of those stories are completely relatable. But I just wonder how often we might be doing that in other areas of our life. Because God doesn't exist in a silo for us just as moms. So could we do that in our marriages? You know, are we hell-bent on, you know, being a certain way and trying to get our spouse to heaven, right? Because that's, we're supposed to be the sanctification of each other. You know, do we do it in friendships? Do we do it in relationships with our, you know, our family of origin? I mean, there are other ways to look past that you can see how it could be pervasive while it's good and well-meaning to want, you know, to get to heaven and to get our spouse to heaven and all this, are we missing the forest for the trees in other relationships in our life?
Well, yeah. And I mean, I have written about that in other areas too, about the temptation to, you know, it's like the time I went to this conference and this priest gave this talk on your daily meditation and on how important it was on Lectio Divina, on encountering God and through the scriptures. And I mean, it was the most beautiful talk I had ever heard. And in the 50 minutes that I sat listening to him, at the end of it, I thought, that's it. I'm abandoning my evil ways and I'm going to really learn how to pray. And he took some questions from the audience. And the first woman, one of the first people who raised her hand, he called on her and he said, and look, maybe this woman is a veritable mystic and she's mastered the art of prayer. And now all she wants to do is get her husband and her kids to pray this way. Perhaps that is the case. But the first thing that she said was, how do I get my family to pray like this? I mean, there were like five questions I would have asked him about prayer before I thought about how I got my kids to pray that way.
Right. Right.
And it's like when we read these books about the spiritual life or even just self-help books, you know, that are so trendy today, you know, when we're highlighting the passages that pertain to other people and not ourselves, that should give us pause.
Right.
And so I do think it is a very real temptation to focus on the sanctification of those around us, on the flaws of those around us, the people we work with, the people we see at church, you know, the hypocrites that we have to deal with every day, and miss the focus on our own sanctification and really dedicating ourselves to daily prayer and really trying to become saints ourselves and following the invitation Christ is issuing to us daily to do his will and not our own. And I know for myself, once I really start to buckle down on that, listen, the cracks in my own foundation become painfully obvious, and I don't have that much time to be focusing on the nincompoops around me.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times in spiritual direction, and I've said this several times to our listeners on the podcast before, but you know, anytime I'm in a conundrum with my children or my spouse, it's over and over, you become holy. Everybody tells me, you become holy. That's who I have control over. And it really does lead me when I'm hoping I'm not the only one that feels this way, but I find I can tell when I'm starting to try to control everyone and everything around me, I am easily angered. Nobody is doing what I think they should be doing. My expectations are being slashed over and over again. And it's because I'm hyper-focused on what the others are doing rather than how I am handling my own sanctification. And I can't control them. And I can remember when I finally realized that about my own children, the freedom that comes with that. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't ever try to control my children. Did that come out right? I still fall into that all the time, trying to control the people in my immediate family, bless them. But knowing that there is no freedom in that, I can usually at some point I realize what I'm doing, and this is why I'm so miserable. It's because I'm trying to do something that is absolutely outside of my ability.
Colleen, I'm sorry, I keep circling back to the book because I had a lot of fun reading this too. Mostly because I could identify with a lot of things. We talked about the Christmas picture. My kids are older now, so I don't sweat taking their picture, but I mean, there were years that it was, yes, I had this perfect vision of how things were going to unfold, and it did not include, you know, the 2-year-old pulling out a chunk of hair from the 3-year-old's head during the picture taking and then the meltdown. You know, you're thinking, my gosh, why is this so challenging? But I'm curious as to some of the feedback that you've gotten from readers of this book too. Are you seeing a theme like, wow, this is something that I'm kind of surprised, but it's resonating with so many people?
Yes. Yes. Well, and the first thing I'll say is it's somewhat of what you had asked me just a few questions back about what does it mean to really have good enough be good enough? You know, isn't that kind of a low bar? One person wrote me and said, that the subtitle of this book was formally How to Get to Purgatory in 3 Easy Steps, which kind of made me laugh out loud because that's not really what I'm trying to encourage here. I'm not trying to encourage everyone to just embrace mediocrity and hang up their shoes and go sit on the couch with a bag of Lay's potato chips and have a field day. I'm just saying if you're highly wired to maybe dial it down a little and allow God a little more freedom to work. My problem was I had such a tight grip of control on my what I thought I could. I had no control, but I certainly tried, and I put so much emphasis on my own efforts that God really didn't have a lot of freedom to work at all in there. And so as I was writing the book, to answer your question though, sometimes I would write certain things that seemed so personal and almost like too much, you know, like, should I be sharing this with the world? And then right after I wondered that, I would think, and by the way, who's going to identify with this? And my editor, I would send her little notes like, I don't know, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the only crazy one in the room. And if the truth be told, I have always been, my sister's nickname for me is Oversharer. And I am someone who's like probably a little bit too honest sometimes. And so I worried that was like a character defect that was now seeping into this writing project and that perhaps not everyone needed to know my dirty laundry. Mm-hmm. And so I would write to my editor, who I loved, and say like, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is too much. And she would just write back, you know, these one-liners that would say, no, it's got to be okay. And so throughout the whole writing process, I just kind of trusted her that I wasn't just going to be this crazy person sharing my dirty laundry. Like, you know how when you read a blog post that it's just a little bit too much information and then you feel like you need to go take a shower afterwards? Yes. That was how I worried the book was going to be. Like, oh my gosh, that Colleen Duggan girl needs a grip. And so I worried about that. But once the book came out, right before it came out, I was given permission by the publisher to get like a pilot group of women together. And we gave them the book in advance and the publisher let them read it with permission not to share. And we kind of walked through this study circle that I had written to go with the book. And it was then, and that was such a blessing for me to be able to see. I had known these women for years. And in that course of that 6 or 7 week study where we gathered and we prayed and chatted together, I learned things about those women that I had never known that they struggled with in their marriage and in their parenting and in their homes in a way that was so beautifully shared and authentic and vulnerable. And I realized, oh my gosh, this is not just me, and that we actually are doing ourselves a huge disservice by not talking about these issues that Catholic families face. And what happens is the result is that we feel like we have to go it alone. And so instead of encountering support and encouragement and the comfort that we need amongst Catholic women, we feel alienated and isolated and alone. And I think that is really where the evil one wants us. And so in writing the book and then in getting to talk to other women, and even in some of the emails I've received, I received one email from a woman after I read it. I was crying and I thought, if no one else is touched by this book, I know that one soul out there, I wrote that for her. And the truth is, I don't think that she's the only person. You know, for every one person that says something, there's probably a handful of others that say me too silently, you know? Mm-hmm. So yes, I think I think the struggle to be good enough, a good enough parent, a good enough wife, a good enough worker, whatever your identity, and we usually wear many hats, we all have that feeling like, are we doing good enough? Are we bringing our good enough to the table? And when we aren't, which that's the reality too, that I'm not always a good enough mom, sometimes I'm a flat out failure, that's going to be okay because God can get in there and work even in the midst of our failures. When I'm weak, then I'm strong. That's what St. Paul said. And we just I've had to come to believe and trust that my weakness is not an impediment to God's working. It's actually a great invitation to his workings in my life.
It is so good and so important. Thank you for reminding me and our listeners of that. And realizing that the standards that the world is putting on us is what's making us not feel good enough. We're trying to please the wrong person rather than being a child of God, whom is always pleased with us. Always pleased with us. We should never, ever have to worry about what the world says, because we know what God says about us, and that he loves us, and that love will never change, and that he is always there with his graces trying to pour into our lives. But that peace of letting him pour into our lives. You know, that control you were talking about, and how we have to give him the space to work in us, and accepting our failures, to get so mad at ourselves. I don't know if you had this experience or not, but to get so mad at yourself because you have failed at something is really a sign of pride.
And oh, yeah, I've had that.
Yes. Like, who am I to think that I'm going to be so awesome all the time and on point all the time and right all the time and patient and demure and gentle and loving and encouraging? No, sometimes I'm at my wit's end and I just lose it. But there's a line in your book, and I think it might actually be, yes, it's one of your excerpts from Father Philippe. And the very last sentence on it, he says, "We must accept ourselves just as we are if the Holy Spirit is to change us for better."
It's true. And wishing we were wired a different way, which I have spent many a year doing, or bemoaning my weaknesses instead of just accepting that this is a problem. This is how I am. And I don't have to wave the white flag of surrender. I can try to come up with some strategies and to help me, and I can pray and I can sacrifice and fast and do all of those things. But that perhaps this weakness was given to me to remind me of how weak I am. And if I didn't have the weakness, I wouldn't have any need for God. And so the thing that I sometimes, the weakness that I hate the most is the very great reminder of my need for God. And without it, I would just be floating out into the wilderness on my own because I'm so great. Not really, but you know what I mean.
No, absolutely. And while we're called to that, I was thinking that there's also that place where we can maybe use our temperament as a crutch in a way, you know, like, well, yeah, that's just the way I'm wired. So, yeah. But it, and even though we have that weakness, he still doesn't want to leave us there. So as we lean into him, which is the grace of it, that he can transform us, that we do eventually move away from that particular weakness or vice or piece of our temperament that needs tempering. But that doesn't ever mean that we finally arrive, because once we get through that one, we realize, like an onion, there's another one over here that we have to work on. I mean, we're always going to be dependent upon him. And at the same time, we need to be open to that constant renewal of what he does want to do in our life through the Holy Spirit.
Certainly. And also, I think for me, too, the other part of that is that I'm not, that just because I'm asking to be delivered of whatever weakness it is, doesn't mean that he's on my same timeline. Because that's exactly another hard lesson I've had, is that, you know, I certainly make the request and, you know, go to the sacraments, especially that sacrament of confession, where I'm openly and regularly confessing those tendencies towards sin, in order to have God's grace help me in those areas. But, you know, it's like, just because I'm asking doesn't mean immediately it's going to be removed. Now, sometimes God does work like that. But in my own life, I found, like you said, the onion analogy is real. The layers mm-hmm. are there. And it takes time to remove the different layers. And so certainly I'm more patient. I'm less prone to anger than I was 15 years ago. Oh, but you can best be assured that if I have a bad day, I can go off like the best of them.
I can so identify with you. It's just, maybe it's the Irish in us too, right? We're two little Irish girls with six kids. That's
yes.
What happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't mess with us.
Oh my gosh. Well, and I have to say, all of the books that you referenced and different things were all of my favorites. I mean, you're like pulling something from A Severe Mercy. I'm like, oh my gosh. And yeah, Philippe, and you just kept going. It was so great. I mean, and this book was, this actually came to Ireland with me, if you remember.
I was
reading it. It was just so good. And I have to say, I actually have a shirt now that says Good Enough Mom.
Much to your chagrin.
I love it. And Colleen and I have kind of, well, maybe you could share the story. I think your husband did something cute.
He did. Mm-hmm. He did. He, for Mother's Day, well, the publisher, Ave Maria Press, who is just so fabulous to work with, we were having a meeting about marketing. And, you know, they have such great ideas. And so I had told them that I thought it'd be cute on social media to use the hashtag Good Enough Mom, and people could share, you know, like, I'm thinking about like the time when I had, you know, a toddler and I was going to go to daily mass and I dropped some of my big kids off at church, off at school, and we were going to run over to mass, but he had pooped through everything. And all I had, and I was not going to not go to mass. And all I had was a big t-shirt and a diaper. So I just popped that baby in the t-shirt and we went to mass, and he looked like, you know, he did not look out of the covers of Gymboree magazine. I'm going to let you know that. But we went anyway. And so I was telling him, like, moms have that kind of thing where they just have to make the best out of imperfect circumstances. So why don't we use a hashtag Good Enough Mom? And they were like, oh yes, let's do t-shirts. So then someone designed a Good Enough Mom t-shirt, and I just loved it. And so, you know, I've been giving my friends Good Enough Mom t-shirts because they're so cute. And who doesn't need that pick-me-up? Well, for Mother's Day, my husband so sweetly and thoughtfully designed a t-shirt for the kids that said hashtag Good Enough Kid. And I was telling Megan that when they wear the t-shirts, it reduces the incidence of yelling, because I see their t-shirt, I'm like, oh yeah, right. They're just doing the best they can. So anyway, that's how the good enough kid and mom t-shirts came about.
That's right. I told my 15, oh gosh, he's 16 now, 16-year-old son that he was really liking it. I'm like, it doesn't mean I'm lowering the bar. It just means I'm giving you some mercy in places where you still don't have that brain development. He's like, he's like, all right, you know, you guys have heard enough stories about him to know that he'd try to take he'd wear that shirt all the time, basically.
Yeah, it's amazing how some people have no problem embracing their good enough status. Other people, not so much.
Well, we're thankful that you were willing to come on the podcast, and I'm glad that you and Megan have been able to really form a sweet friendship up there in your neck of the woods. So I'm a little jealous. I'm still down here in the South in my closet, as I always am.
Well, I think God arranged it, because we were fortunate to meet at a conference, and it was like, when I met Megan, I was like, oh, I think I've known you for my whole life.
I know. We both said the same thing. But remember when we looked at each other, we're like, we know each other. But we really had not ever met prior to that moment. But it was totally a divine appointment.
It
for
really
sure.
Was. You know, it's like that C.S. Lewis quote about friendship. When mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking about? The one
yes.
I'm talking about. He says, we look at the person, he says, you say, oh, you too?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And in our case, it was, wait, you're crazy with your kids too? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or my case, just crazy, you know?
That's great.
That's okay. I embrace the craziness.
Well, this has been, it has been so awesome having you on. And I encourage our listeners to pick up this book and read it. You're going to laugh. You're going to cry. In some places, you're going to, you know, absolutely be uplifted by Colleen's encouraging words.
Well, thank you so much for having me and for sharing the book. I'm really grateful. And I want to just point people to my website, ColleenMurphyDuggan.com. There's a study guide that people can download and use amongst their friends or at parish study groups, whatever, however they want. And I've just found that it's a really great way of connecting with other women. So I encourage people to use that resource.
Great. Oh, and we'll put that on our show notes, right, Becky, for people to follow.
Yeah. Yeah. Because actually, the gal who was your student, we started a little book study this summer, and this is the book that we chose to go through.
So. Oh, thank you so much. Yes.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, Becky, I mean, Colleen was so much fun to have on. Not that I expected anything less of her, because she's very enthusiastic and super smart.
Yeah. Her extrovertedness made me feel introverted. She was fun. No, you know I love it. And you have said that I would really enjoy getting to talk with her. And you're right. It was just a fun treat. And I loved being able to tell her how our paths have crossed in different times. And so that was a fun little connection.
It is fun because it really is small. It's a small, small world, that Catholic world. Yeah. And I really loved how we just kind of unpacked a lot of what the book is about. And it's so true because we experience these things. What I really like that she had pointed out too is, you know, we experience these things and oftentimes we keep it to ourselves and then we're going through it alone. And yes, you don't have to be an oversharer, but just those little things of feeling like inadequate or, you know, as a mom, to be able to talk about those situations, maybe even laugh about those situations. And as you do that, you kind of are unveiled to realize that God's really got all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's this one line in the book. I'm going to actually quote it, read it to you guys. It says, "The way I silently spoke to myself throughout the day dripped with a relentless critique of my performance. I wouldn't talk to my worst enemy the way I talk to myself." Oh, that's so me. I do that. So I'm so bad about doing that. And I bet there's probably one listener out there saying, "Me too." Mm-hmm. And we really have to stop doing that. We need to stop talking to ourselves, you know, or listening to those crazy accusations. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you and I, we've talked about this several times on the podcast about how God talks to us versus how God, our loving Father, talks to us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And start to recognize that voice and just kick it out.
Yeah. 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 But gosh, how do we get, I get so deaf to it. Mm. And I'm just walking through, just chiming in on myself. And sometimes I don't even realize I'm doing it until I'm in such a deep hole. It's really difficult to pull myself out, mm-hmm. which is why we have good friends who say, "No, that's a lie. And it's time to denounce it."
Well, one particular podcaster that I like to listen to, and I have to give credit where credit is due, Bill Johnson. He was talking once and he'd said, you know, that negative cycle, it takes me, you know, 10 minutes to get there, meaning like in a hole, and a week to get out. And it's so true. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. And so you just can't even enter the dance. You just can't. So,
yeah.
I don't know. So yeah,
no. Well, and I'm glad that y'all talked about the title because it is that some people can read that and think that it was a little misleading. Not misleading. That's a very negative way to say that. But they're going to assume that it's something that the book absolutely is not. So I'm glad y'all clarified that so that more people will feel like, okay, it's time to pick up the book and read it. And get a couple girlfriends together and sit around with some coffee and in real life talk about it so that we can be really encouraging each other and building each other up and calling out the lies that are stealing that freedom that we have in Christ.
Yeah. Amen.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us this week. You know that we really are so grateful for all of you with us in the trenches. Don't forget, you can find show notes. You can also find our support page at Thriving in the Trenches, where you can find all the links to everything we talked about in the show. But you can also find a link where you can support us in our monthly podcasting. So please subscribe, guys. Share us with a friend. Leave us a review on iTunes. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. where you can join the conversation. Thanks for coming.